Senator John Tester, a member of the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee. Senator, it's a pleasure to talk to you again. You're bringing back your bill on security clearances in the federal government. Are you adding anything to this, or have events changed to cause you to look at this differently, or are you back to try to bring back what you worked on in the last Congress? Thank you for joining me, sir.
Yeah, it's good to be with you, Francis. We're actually combining a couple bills together, one which would strengthen the security clearance process simply by prohibiting federal contractors and employees who have compromised the integrity of background checks previously from performing future background checks. That was the old SCARE Act. And then we're also putting in with that another bill that prevents contractors from providing this final stamp of approval on their own background investigations, which only makes sense, but sometimes even things that make perfect sense have a hard time getting it through Congress. So those two are together. I think it will help. I think it'll help firm up the security clearance process. We still need to take a look at what's going on after hopefully we get these two provisions passed to make sure that we have folks who are very, very well qualified to access this nation's most sensitive information. I think that's really important. As I've talked to you before on, Francis, we've got 5 million folks out there who have security clearances. I think we need to really be much more particular about who we're giving them out to. They shouldn't be handing them out like candy at Halloween.
I understand the provisions of the second bill that you've added into the text of the SCARE Act. One expression that I've heard from the vendor community, though, is a concern that, let's say, USIS, we'll just use them as an unfortunate example, goes out of business. What's to prevent the principals or the employees from a company like that from forming a new company that's never done business with the government before and doesn't have a track record that the agency can, that OPM can look back at and say, we can or cannot trust this organization?
Well, I think that Congress needs to act like Congress needs to act and really provide the kind of oversight that's necessary to make sure that these folks aren't just jumping from one company to another. And that can be done. I think it's just a matter of oversight and ensuring that these new companies, that we've got a list of those employees and that they don't match up. I mean, it's pretty simple, actually. And I think if we tell the companies straight up front that would not be acceptable, I think that would help a lot also.
You have some bills, too, that address some of the issues that we saw on the high-risk list. General Dodaro was on the program a couple of weeks ago talking about the health care system at the Veterans Administration going on to the high-risk list and federal government IT also joining the high-risk list, nothing coming off this time around. Tell me about the bill in particular that addresses the issue at the VA, sir.
Well, I mean, we started addressing this last summer with the bill that we went to conference with and passed out of the House and the Senate in July to give the VA more accessibility to hiring folks with debt relief and really ensuring their ability to go out there and get the kind of health care professionals they need, whether those are mental health folks or whether they're general practitioners. The Veterans Administration has failed on that issue. We've got a tremendous recruitment problem in the VA. Now, look, it's tough to get a lot of these folks in the private sector, too, but when we don't have the healthcare professionals on the ground, that results in longer waiting lists. It results in veterans being shuffled off to other facilities, and it results in really poor health care for the veterans. What we've done to help offset some of that loss in staff is we've got the 40-mile rule and the 30-day rule, where if it takes them longer than 30 days to get an appointment or they live further than 40 miles away from a veteran's facility as the crow flies, but as the roads would take them, then they can go to the private sector. So those are the two things that happen, but I will tell you, I've talked to Secretary McDonald at length about this. This problem in the VA, I don't think it's getting any better right now, to be honest with you. And that I say that saying that we've got great folks in the VA that are giving out incredibly good health care, the folks that are on the ground. But we just need to have a bigger push by the folks here in Washington, D.C., and middle management folks to understand that we can have the best facility in the world out there, and if it isn't manned up properly, we can't provide the care that we need to give to our veterans. So there's still much work to do in the VA, and I can't speak to what it's like in urban areas, but I can tell you in rural areas, we got great folks on the ground. We just need more of them.
All right. Were you surprised at the low take-up rate of the choice cards that Secretary McDonald talked about in the last couple of weeks?
No, and I'll tell you why. I think that veterans like the health care that the Veterans Administration gives. I think they like the health care that comes from the hospitals and the community-based outpatient centers, and I think they want to stay with those medical providers. Our challenge is making sure that those medical providers are all they can be. And I think that what we're seeing in the VA right now when it comes to utilization in the private sector is most of that utilization is coming from the VA saying, you know what, you need to go to this person outside the VA to get help because they can do it better than we can. And there's nothing wrong with that. But in the end, I think that the reason the choice card hasn't been taken up as much as we thought is because I think the VA does a pretty darn good job.
Do you think that that will change as time goes on, or do you expect them to be used in far lower numbers than you and your colleagues expected as time goes on now that you've had a chance to see how it's working for your constituents?
Yeah, I don't have a crystal ball on this, but I'll tell you, if we don't get the kind of healthcare professionals that we need on the ground and we see facilities close or we see patients turned away, they will be taken up a lot more. I think that if we can get good facilities manned by men and women who know the challenges that our people who serve in the military have, I think it'll greatly reduce the amount of take-up on the choice card.
So it's a recruiting and retention problem, not a policy and procedure problem, it sounds like,
that's
in your view.
That's exactly correct. From my perspective, that's exactly correct.
You and your colleague, Senator Schatz from Hawaii, are working on a bill also that would help postal workers at the Postal Service. You've met with the new Postmaster General, Ms. Brennan. What's your takeaway from the conversations that you've had with her about where you see the Postal Service headed?
Well, I think there are some in Congress and there are some within the Postal Service that want to privatize it. I am not in that camp. I think the Postal Service is very, very important to rural and urban America. And I will tell you that I think that there is no doubt that it needs reform, and I think the reforms are much simpler than what's been going on in Congress the last 4 years. And it's about taking care of the prepayment issue on retirement. It's about cutting those folks loose so they can deliver things that they can't, that they're prohibited from delivering now. But in the end, the bill that Schatz and I introduced yesterday, Senator Schatz, really gives mid-level managers the right to appeal removal, suspensions, reductions in pay. Those are just, that's just common sense stuff that needs to happen. In the end, I think the Postal Service can be very, very valuable and vibrant going into the future. But we can't continue to shut down mail processing centers. We can't continue to reduce mail delivery standards. And we can't continue to push business away from the Postal Service when we should be doing everything we can do to satisfy the customers that are out there. And I think you'll see the post office be around for another century. But we've had some leadership in the Postal Service in previous years that I think their goal was to privatize it, turn it over to UPS or FedEx, and make the Postal Service go away. I do not believe that's the right direction to go.
I continue to find it fascinating that the federal government contracts with the Postal Service to deliver only, I believe the last number from the GAO was well under 10% of the federal government's own overnight and second-day packaging.
Well, that's part of exactly what I'm talking about. If the delivery standards are reduced, and they have been in rural America, if they're reduced, people will go to other options to get their products delivered. And I think that's a big mistake as far as how we move the economy forward in this country.
Senator, it's always great to talk to you, and I look forward to another opportunity, hopefully in this Congress, to come and visit you face-to-face and continue our dialogue. I appreciate your time, sir.
Thanks, Francis. Appreciate it. Bye-bye.